gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Brendan Scannell is making his gay-ass podcast debut. Brendan, how does it feel to be on a gay-ass podcast? I know you've got a fraught history with podcasts. How do you feel today?
I feel really good to be here. I feel like we had talked about me doing this many years ago, and Matt Rogers once called me his most podcast-resistant friend. And so I was like, I'm not really doing podcasts right now. But now I am. Now I am. And I'm happy to be here. And I actually reached out to you and I said, can I do your podcast?
You did. And it was such a gorgeous message to receive because I have been a Brendan Scannell. What are Brendan Scannell's fans called? Scannellians?
Scantrons.
No, I love that. You're in Edinburgh. How do you pronounce that Scottish famous town?
I kind of trail off and get really quiet at the end because I'm not sure. I think it's Edinburgh.
Well, now I'm triggered because I hated growing up when people either called you bro, dude, or just called you by your last name. That always felt really sort of triggering, especially in a PE setting. But that's just me. Speaking of Edinburgh, you are there performing The Abyss, your stunning solo show after a sold-out run of the Hollywood Fringe, which we're, of course, going to talk about doing a solo show. We're going to talk about some global travels. When we go to Substack, I'll ask you about how the Scottish men are, because how could I not? But before we do that, I do want to get into a quick hot take on traveling. You have a joke about performing on a gay cruise. Brendan Scannell, it is one of my dreams and fantasies. Do you recommend?
It's one of your fantasies to perform on a gay cruise?
Yeah, because then after the show, I envision myself just sort of like eating the all-you-can-eat buffet and then potentially making out with strangers.
I would say this. I had a great time. The cruise comedy in general, which is kind of like a hard, it's really hard. There are some people who are so good at it. I was with Roz Hernandez, paired with her, and she was on fire. And I kind of just did okay, and one night even bombed. And the thing about the cruise is if you bomb, then you go to the galley the next day and you think of them maybe like 100 and 150 gay men and two lesbians who might have been there, who are looking at you like you're a puppy who is about to get euthanized.
Right. And statistically speaking, even though there might be thousands of men on that ship, the 100 who saw your show are going to be the only people you see the next day. And I do understand that that is how the universe works. Well,
but I, on the cruise, it went to Mexico, went down to PV. I never got off the boat. For 8 days, I was on the boat.
And was that for like a emotional safety reason? Do you have a fear of seeing the world? What was that?
I think I've been to all the places in Mexico that it was going to. And what was nice is when everyone got off the boat was empty. So I would like go to the restaurants that I hadn't gone to, and I would go to the gym, and I would enjoy the facilities.
It was like my own private vibes.
Yes, exactly that.
Which, by the way, I think a Home Alone gay edition actually sounds stunning. And I think Brendan Scannell might be the person for the job. I don't know. You have, if I compare you to Macaulay Culkin, does that feel offensive to you, or do you take it with stride?
Kevin!
Thank you.
No, not at all. No, I mean, I love Macaulay Culkin.
We're getting into lore. We're getting into Home Alone references. I think it's only fair that we ask the famous gay-ass podcast question to Brendan Scannell, and that question is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I think I blame the Catholic Church.
Sure.
I was raised Catholic. Irish Catholic. Everyone I knew was Irish Catholic when I was a kid. And because of that, I was surrounded by a lot of like Irish Catholic kids, but then also a lot of Irish Catholic moms, and those moms became like my best friends. Like my best friend growing up, her name was Susie, and she was like my friend Mark's mom. And I think because of that, I just have always been, even as like a 6-year-old, was like an adult gay man. being like, you should get your real estate license.
Which, by
the way, extra income.
I can only allege that Susie probably opened up to you about things that she would normally not open up to a 10-year-old child about, maybe about her career switches, about her husband. Do you remember her opening up about things that were probably towing the line of appropriateness?
Well, she had two sons who were great, but she was their mom, so like they were annoyed by her, you know, as like we all are sort of annoyed by our own mothers. Right. But for me, like, she let me call her, she was like, you call me Susie. And so I was like, okay, great, so you're my best friend.
I'm just picturing she like loves to pour a white wine spritzer and sort of long billowy garments in the kitchen. Ugh, Brendan.
PJs. I would sleep over there and she'd always be in like a big pajama.
God, I love a mom in a pajama. There's something so special about a young gay boy's relationship to his friends' mothers. I could name off the top of my head the gorgeous first names of so many of my friends' moms. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that it would not be a gay-ass podcast if I didn't dive into the Catholicism of it all. Would you say that you survived unscathed from the Catholic school, or did the idea of being told you would burn in hell sort of stick with you forever?
I definitely had to unpack that for sure. I think that I had this idea that my suffering was somehow related to some inherent flaw, you know, that we're all born with. And, you know, then I had to learn Buddhism and just learn that life is suffering, and that's kind of it, you know? Suffering everywhere. Right.
The Buddhists do say that.
Yes, life is suffering, or life has suffering, so don't take it personally.
Well, the listeners are at this point probably annoyed to hear about my tonsil surgery, but since this is the day
before, you just got a call right before this.
Oh my God.
For the listeners at home, we got on the Zoom and Eric answered a call and was like, this is the hospital.
And it's so embarrassing as to why they were calling me, because, well, two things happen. I actually haven't talked about this publicly, but I feel like now is the time, Brennan Scannell. So not only have I gotten strep throat enough times to get my tonsil surgery, I got it 3 months in a row earlier this year. It was a nightmare. But on top of that, earlier
strep
this year...
Strep throat?
Strep throat, Brendan.
What are you doing with your
Literally, I wish I could tell you I was doing the most despicable things. If I kiss a single man for more than 20 seconds, the statistical probability of meeting strep throat skyrockets. And luckily I'm not the only gay guy to have experienced this. A friend of mine says the same thing. And sure, if you do more, you might also get, but I literally, the last time I got strep throat, I made out with a friend.
I like that you said, like, when I kiss a single man, and I'm like, what if you kiss a man in a relationship?
Oh, by the way, that man was in a relationship. I will say that.
Classic.
Classic. Yeah. And I shout him out. He's, you know, good. 12 out of 10, despite the strep. But I not only got strep for the third month in a row, but earlier this year, I did get mono as well. And I have not talked about it because I was almost...
Wait, adults are getting mono?
Well, this adult did.
Wow. What did that feel? Did it knock you out?
For a full like 4.5 weeks. I like didn't socialize. Yeah. I would literally record these episodes. I would take a nap. I would do more work. I would take a nap. I would then watch TV. I would then go to bed. Guess what? The next day I would record. I would work. I would nap. I would work. I would nap. I would go to bed. For 4 weeks, I was just like working and sleeping. But anywho, I called the doctor at like 4 p.m. last week when I was high after smoking a gorgeous joint. And I told him, hey, I smoked weed and I had mono. Is that going to affect the surgery? And the poor lady who was just like the front desk worker was like, I can like pass your message along. And that phone call that I just got was them saying, yeah, it's fine. You're good. So surgery is on, Brendan. And thank you for bearing with that.
Surgery is no joke. I mean, Your throat's really going to hurt. I think because of Grey's Anatomy and these TV shows, you're like, oh yeah, like surgery. And then like the patient's fine. I think that all the time when like women have not only babies, but like C-sections, I'm like, not only
Oh
did you
my
just give
God.
birth, but you were just like truly cut and open and stapled and.
And thank you for saying that, because we don't enough talk about C-sections on this podcast. And I just want to announce to all the people who have given birth, whether it was vaginally or C-sectionally, I don't know how y'all do it. And I want to thank you for creating life. As something that we can't do. And my sister-in-law, not to overshare, but she had a baby and did the C. And I just, I think she, all the people
did
having,
the C.
did the C and all the people having children, I think, you know, while that's not my journey, I want to thank them and tell them that I don't know if I could do it, but I'm glad that they can.
Are you single?
Married with one child, which is a 12-pound terrier mix. What's your relationship status?
I am in a long-term relationship.
Yeah, how long?
7 years. 7 years.
Okay, so funny you say that. We are going to, over on Substack, I'm going to, of course, ask some invasive questions about your relationship. But the one I want to ask here is, you know, people say to me, we've been married for, it's 7 years in October. And,
wow, Mazel tov.
Thank you
My
so
boyfriend's
much.
Jewish, so I
and thank you for
interact.
Also,
I'm chosen. I've been chosen.
Wait, this is wild, because my husband grew up Catholic, married a Jew. You're the Catholic with Jew. Okay, well, so I'm loving where this is going already, Brennan.
I think it's a good match. It's like different sides of guilt and different, at least for us, communication styles. Like, he wants to talk about things, and I sometimes I'm like, we don't need to talk. Everything's okay. And that sort of like anxiety, depression circle, we kind of like balance each other.
You know, some might say it's balancing. Some might say that it's sort of the perfect situation for couples therapy. We have found both.
But we've done couples therapy.
Oh, good. And we shout out couples therapy here from a place of pride. When we first started dating, there was very much the like, I over communicated and he under communicated. And I'm not going to say one of us was like, we were both on the opposite sides of the spectrum. I thought I needed to talk about every single subject under the sun. He would shut down so viscerally that it was like quite fraught. And you know, now it still happens, but I guess my question for you is, as somebody dating a Jewess, what is a part of the culture that you enjoy or maybe have even embraced, would you say?
I love Passover. Joe's family does like a big Passover every year, and I make Brussels sprouts, which, you know, they had in the desert famously. And yeah, I enjoy like finding the Afikonen and
the Afikonen O'Brien. No, it's Afikomen, but you're so close. And that was
well, and his family's kind of like LA hippie, transparent Jewish people. And so like, there's a lot of like acoustic guitar.
You need to understand how jealous I just became, because you know what I'm now picturing is a Judith Light type playing an acoustic guitar. And is there anything better?
There's definitely a Judith Light type running around the kitchen for sure.
would is that Joe's mom, aunt, or another person?
I think his mom is like, I think both of our mothers are very strong, sort of like leaders of their families. Strong personalities. Yeah. But I'm not from LA, so I live there now and I live there forever. And one thing I felt like I was missing that I have now gained is like a family in the place where I live.
Yeah.
Because I kind of packed up my little Ford Escape in 2013 and like drove out to Los Angeles with just like a couple friends and didn't know anyone.
Wow.
Didn't have any family out there.
Cut to me fully weeping, because I don't really, I mean, I have a great like community of friends here, but I do think I'm lacking like the Judith Light types at a home.
It's really nice to just like have parents around, even as like a 36-year-old.
Oh, of course. Well, by the way, also 36. So I love that for us. But I, you know, kind of a dark-sided tale that, Brennan, I don't know what it is about you. Maybe it's because you're usually anti-podcasts, and now I'm like, just wanting to make it worth your while. But I'm going to open up about something that I also don't open up about. Outside of mono, I had a crazy friend breakup like 4 years ago, and she had a bunch of family in LA that I had seen from time to time. And so that was like kind of a dark-sided breakup to lose that mishpucha, if you will. But I think as a gay journalist, because you are the guest and not me, I want to ask if you knew any Jews being raised in Valparaiso, Indiana.
No, didn't know. I think I knew there. Yes, a girl from my neighborhood, Mia, was Jewish. And actually in kindergarten, we did, shout out Mia, so nice, the most lovely. Her mother was amazing. And, you know, we did the dreidel in kindergarten, learned about the, and also like as Christian people, Catholic, there's like an sort of like, you know, we did steal one of your books, which is like a significant portion of like our doctrine. So like, I'm like familiar with the stories of yore
from the Old Testament.
Yeah, but I didn't like, I never went to like a bat or bar mitzvah or anything like that.
Well, you know what, if Matt and I have children, you know what, actually Matt has considered the idea of converting to Judaism, and partially because he really wants a bar mitzvah. So if my husband, if we throw him a bar mitzvah, I will make sure to get you your first bar mitzvah invite, because I think you would really slay. By the way, for people who might not know, I just want to kind of like talk about your lore for a second. You packed up your, which car was it, did you say?
Ford Escape.
Brennan Scannell packed up his Ford Escape, moved to Los Angeles, and then made a stunning career. One of my favorite credits of yours is, of course, Bonding, which is a television show on Netflix that is not only an amazing show, but also past guest, recent guest of the podcast, Matt Wilkus, is a part of Bonding. So we want to shout him out.
I love Matt Wilkus.
Love Matt Wilkus. I mean, I was a fan for years, and then getting to chat with him was a very hot, horny, fun time. But you also were in the Heathers reboot in 2018 playing Heather Duke. You're again doing this amazing solo show. I've seen you do stand-up. I mean, you really have a very exciting career, especially for somebody like me who looks up to gay comedians like you who have created their own paths. Speaking of Bonding, outside of your Emmy nomination for Outstanding Actor in a Short Form Comedy or Drama Series, which I want to say a huge mazel tov.
Thank you.
Some people might want to know about the BTS. The show was originally not made for Netflix, then Netflix bought it. As somebody who likes the ins and outs of Hollywood, do you get paid extra when something gets picked up by Netflix? Like, what I've heard that like it's not as John Marco Cerezi had a tiny bit part on Bonding, and he was joking about
years ago. It's like his first TV credit.
He was joking about
that's where we met on set. We met on set in 2000. It must have been 2017. Yeah. So and then all of a sudden, like, I like checked my Instagram one day, and like he was the most famous comedian in the world.
Yeah, no, he really did that thing.
Yeah. So I had done Heathers. I had just shot that, and it hadn't come out yet. And this French company, Black Pills, which immediately went bankrupt. It like momentarily made like two television shows. It made one show called Pillow Talk that Britt Lauer is actually in from Severance.
Oh, wow.
And that was made, created by Sharon Horgan of so many different
Catastrophe.
Things. Bad Sisters, etc. And then writer Doyle pitched a story based off of his like first job in New York City, where he was the assistant to a dominatrix. Two Black Pills, and they greenlit it, and I just submitted a tape to that, and I remember my manager calling me and being like, so this is like a large web series. I think the budget was like $750,000 for the season, and we were shooting over 20 days in New York, and they were like, you'd have to be a local hire. So I had to fly myself to New York, and I stayed in my friend Sam Greisman's apartment in Brooklyn. And I think I got paid like $8,000, which, you know, is just not very much at all once everything gets taken out of that. But
Right.
I just loved the story, and I had just done this job where I had made money that I thought was going to, at the time, really thought I had every single person patting, like whispering in my ear, like, oh my God, the Heathers reboot, it's finally happening for you. Like, you're going to be so famous. Like, remember Riverdale was on the air,
Of
and
course.
these network executives and marketing people at Paramount Network, they were like, we're launching Paramount Network. All of Viacom was behind this reboot. Like, it was actually almost like induced a manic episode in me. The like weird, strange press that we were doing. I was doing like, yeah, Women's Wear Daily and GQ and all of this stuff. And but in the meantime, I shot this web series just because I loved the story and I loved the script. I kind of just did it because I wanted to be in New York. And then that got bought by Netflix and ended up being like a much bigger success in terms of like people seeing it. And yeah, and then the second season was Netflix, so we did get paid more for that season and got like proper residuals and things like that.
Listen, if you enjoy this podcast, you're probably horny, or at least consider yourself to be a part of the horny experience. And y'all, I just read a book with a whole bunch of hornery. It is called The Dare by New York Times best-selling author Harley LaRue. And if you've listened to the podcast for a while, this is not the first time I've talked about Harley LaRue. I love their work, and this book is just so delicious. It follows a former prom queen who falls for a guy she went to high school with, but it's a guy she would have never expected to go for. There's also gay representation and gay hornery, and I do think you, as a gay-ass podcast listener, would enjoy. I highly recommend you go check out The Dare, if only for the fact that Amazon banned it temporarily for being too sexy. What? So go check out The Dare by Harley LaRue, available now wherever books are sold. But then when you talk about Heathers, I think this is really interesting. BTS, you're getting all these people whispering in your ear, this is it, baby. Get ready for constantly being ushered to place in limousines. You're never going to have to worry about money again. And then the Heathers of it all did not exactly go that way. Will you sort of speak to what ended up actually happening with Heathers?
It is a weird experience where, like, I think I was like a 25-year-old or 26-year-old, like, not successful stand-up comedian and improviser in LA. And, all of a sudden I was like at the VMAs, like walking the red carpet, like, and all of that was just a mentally sort of like a very strange, because I'm, yeah. But then Heathers was supposed to come out, and then there was like subject matter in it about school shootings, like satirizing thoughts and prayers culture. And then in 2018, when it was about to come out, there was like a succession of Parkland happened, and then there was a succession of just horrific, and not to be like that was a particularly bad year for school shootings, but there it felt like there was really there were these horrible tragedies. And I the network basically said the show wasn't sensitive to that, those tragedies, which felt like a real slap in the face to at least the show I thought that we had made. And that was just a good reminder for me that, like, you're not really in control of anything other than the experience you have with the other artists that you're working with, and there's no guarantees. And now that was got was very common for things to be shelved, like Batgirl was shelved, that Acme movie was shelved, and is now finally coming out. But at the time, I remember I called my manager at the time, and I was like, wait, they're shelving the show? How can they do that? And he was like, yeah, it's too bad when this happens. And I was like, this can
They
happen?
don't prepare you for that.
Because I had sort of been promoting the show on my Instagram for like 8 months. So I just felt really embarrassed. Like, I felt like I was had become so foolish for starting to believe that something I did was going to be good or successful. So, and I had this therapist at this time, this kind of like pushy lesbian who was like in my ear, and she was like, lean in, take every opportunity, like, don't say no to anything. And so then I felt extremely overexposed by that whole experience.
That will also think about the age you were. Like, that's a pretty, while of course you're not a child, you're mid-20s. You're still very much like cosplaying as an adult. You're very much like believing what is told to you, especially with the whispers of you've made it. And then when they snatch it away from you, that like, I'm sure that created such a vacuum of, questioning of like what actually is real. And I think honestly, despite anything else that's happened to you, it's just a testament to you staying in the business that shows like your strength, because that is not for the weak of like, to go from being a broke stand up to the VMAs to then, you know, back to not having
back to being a broke stand up.
Whatever it was. That's a fuck.
Yeah, I saw like James Scully was in the original cast of Oh Mary. He played Mary's teacher in the original one. And, you know, and his, yeah, and he's, you know, done a bunch of stuff. Whenever I like see James, I'm like, you know, I'm like, that's my sister. That's like my sister in experience.
And, because James was in Heathers too.
Yeah, he was JD, the kind of, you know, the one who blows up the school, and the Christian Slater character. Wow. And so, yeah, we were sort of like bonded in whatever experience, that bizarre experience that was.
That's wild. And just to like give you like the weird more connections to you and I, James Scully, my like best friend in LA is James Scully's manager. So I got to meet James and see him in Oh Mary a couple times and hang out with him. And he did the podcast, and just huge, huge James Scully stan here. Totally. And also just crazy lore to think about you both doing Heathers. Before we move on to some more hard-hitting questions, I just think Brennan Skinnell giving us Heather's lore begs the question about you in high school. Where would you say you were sort of archetypically? Were you theater nerd? Were you mean girl? Were you band geek? What was Brennan Skinnell's vibe in high school?
I was like a really high-functioning kid, like, which then all of a sudden I was in my 30s and was like, why am I no longer functioning? But yeah, I was like, I was definitely a theater kid, speech and debate, class president. I ran unopposed.
Ran unopposed. Okay, well that's gorgeous. But wait, what was your high school? If everyone who did high school theater has a show that at the time they thought could transfer to Broadway, Brennan Skinnell, what was a high school credit that you were like, this is transferring?
I was Snoopy in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Huge.
And all my friends' moms thought I was fantastic.
And you know, was it Mark's mom? Who? What was your friend's name?
Susie. Yep.
Susie loved it, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
And I still sing the song Supper Time to my Snoopy whenever I go to dinner.
Supper Time. Wait, what were you? what were you in high school?
Devastated to hear. Well, I did my first ever theatrical experience was at Jewish sleepaway camp, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And wow. I was so embarrassed to audition. I didn't have a song, so I sang like a whispered happy birthday. And then they made up a role for me and a few other young boys, which was Woodstock's Friends. The Yellow Bird. They gave Woodstock a circle of friends who don't exist in the script, but I didn't know what the show was about despite being in it, but I was hooked, Brennan. I was hooked.
I think that's pretty common with that show where they kind of add a large chorus of, what are they called? The peanuts?
Yes,
the peanuts. Adds some extra peanut. Did you go to Jewish sleepaway camp every year for like 8 weeks?
So I went for the first summer. I was really young. I was like, I mean, like 10 or like I was young. And I went for 2 weeks the first summer, Loved it. Second summer went for 4 weeks. Super homesick. And, you know, definitely got a little bit gay bullied. My second year, I was with a bunch of like bro-y Jewish boys who were trying to teach me how to walk less like a girl. And that was pretty damaging. So then the next two summers, I went to theater camp, sleepaway camp for 4 weeks at Interlochen in Michigan.
And, oh, sure.
I was also very homesick during those, but also loved to like wear a uniform and take choir very seriously. So I did 4 years of sleepaway camp, and I was the only one out of my siblings to do it because I've always wanted to like get out and like be my own, you know, like, I don't know, subconsciously I wanted my freak flag to fly, even though I wasn't out until right before I graduated high school. But no, yeah, I definitely did the sleepaway camps. My high school role though was my like thing that I felt was Broadway was either Fagin and Oliver or I mean,
did you have the age makeup on?
Not only did I have age makeup, I had like
bald cap.
I had like an anti-Semitic prosthetic nose on top of my already big nose.
Where was this?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh yeah, that checks out.
Which I didn't even realize at the time. I'm only realizing really now and telling you this by judging your face that that's sort of problematic. At the time, I was like, "Oh my god, I'm getting so much hair and makeup, and my wig was nuts, and shout out to the costume designer Teresa. She really always pulled out all the stops. But I guess a giant prosthetic nose for Fagin is maybe not
right.
Right.
Maybe a little bit caricature-y.
A little bit Shylock the Jew, but
is that character even Jewish?
Well, I don't think so, but there's like you got to pick a pocket or two. It's all about like getting your coins and your money. So like it's not looking good.
That's but maybe not because looking great.
Maybe because I'm Jewish it's okay. Yes to it.
That feels like my parents watching, something I
like. What the fuck?
That feels like an Arrested Development joke or something.
Yeah, this kid who doesn't know he's being a part of like a stereotypical sort of anti-Semitic trope.
Right, like a Proud Boys production.
Yeah, literally.
Of Oliver.
Like, who produced this? The Westboro Baptist Church? Okay, wait. So we only have a few more minutes before we go over to Substack. And so I want to make sure to get to... Oh, this was... The Abyss, your show, is... It sounds amazing. It's basically an hour-long descent to the depths of your brain, where your Irish mother is a life coach obsessed with death. Your bipolar brother is communing spiritually with Gwyneth Paltrow. And your inner child is a total asshole. Great log line, by the way. Compliments to the chef. The show sounds great. Edinburgh sounds great. We're going to talk more about Edinburgh over on the Substack side. But since you are so vulnerably open about your past in this solo show, I want to ask about the ginger bent of it all. Growing up, gingers got so much hate, I feel. Whereas now, I hope you feel in adoration, adulation. I mean, who among us doesn't love a handsome ginger like Brennan Scannell? But with that, a controversial question to ask on this gay ass podcast, is the word firecrotch a slur? How do you feel about the term firecrotch?
You know, I haven't been called that probably since high school.
Yeah.
Which I think that episode of South Park where gingers don't have souls really fueled a certain type of boy in our generation, because you know that's like how, you know, we as kids, especially boys, like bully each other or create comedy is just repeating things we watched on TV. Like I would just like quote Will Ferrell, and that was my idea of like comedy. So yeah, I distinctly remember that South Park episode about the gingers coming out and it having a marked effect on my ability to walk around school.
I really feel for the gingers, the redheads as kids, because, you know, simply for the fact that you were born into a ginger heritage made you have a target on your back, and that is fucked up. Were you devastated to be redheaded as a kid?
You know, I think I didn't like the attention that it gave me.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, women and mothers and grandmothers are particularly obsessed with the hair color. Even now in, like, my adulthood, like, I'll get, like, yelled at by women for it. Like, ooh, great hair. And so as a kid, I didn't like that it made me different because I didn't want to be different from anybody, you know?
Of course.
I mean, so it, I wouldn't say it certainly wasn't like a traumatic experience being ginger, but it I do particularly remember wanting to have like sandy brown hair like everyone else.
Oh, yeah. I think I wanted to be blonde hair, blue eyed because of the Aryan messaging I was given about like... Sorry to run this master race, but like that is sort of what I was taught as a kid. Do people, this is more of a Substack question, but I just can't help but ask. Do people fetishize you as a ginger person? Like, or did they as you were like?
I wish. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think my partner had ever dated a redhead before me. You know, I wasn't like a long string of... One thing I do like is that like my boyfriend and I look very different. Like we're not boyfriend twins. We're both short. We're both like 5'6". So we're like little guys next to each other. So I think people are like, yeah, you guys make sense. But like we look quite different, but we can still share clothes.
Which is one of the biggest benefits of being in a same sex relation or a same size relation. Yeah. No,
I think straight people have their clothes have become more gender neutral because of the economy.
The recession indicator.
Right.
Clothing becoming non-gender. The idea of boyfriend twins I find to be sort of interesting. As somebody who like celebrates queer culture so much here, people really, really brush up against that. In fact, one of the clips for Confession Hole, my glory hole talk show, recently came out with Kevin McDonald. Your friend Kevin is his handle, which he's in a bit of a divisive character in the community, but he spends a whole section of the interview saying how he is not a boyfriend twin with his boyfriend. And then I just read the comments this morning, actually, and people are saying you are boyfriend twins as if it's like a like something he should be not only honest about but ashamed of. I don't think it's
boyfriend twins does kind of feel like a slur.
It
like,
does.
I do kind of feel like that's like there's not much you can come back with to that.
It's like, well, you look like yourself. It's like, I do.
Right.
I understand maybe if there's like an embarrassment that you maybe ended up dating somebody that resembles you. But like, if you're a gay person, they call it same sex for a reason. Like the word same is in there. And I think it's okay if like the guy that I got strep from most recently kind of looks like me. Sorry, I said it.
And that's why you got strep, because God smited you down.
You really
did
go to Catholic school. If anybody here is in a boyfriend twin relationship, you have my vote, is all I want to say.
Yeah. Live loud, out proud, boyfriend twins.
Thank you. Put it on a fucking shirt. Okay, we're going to do our final question on the main feed before we cross over to Substack. And that question is a tough one, Brennan Scannell. For if the world was ending, and you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
And, you know, this is me saving my own people, but I would save Julianne Moore.
Gingers support gingers.
Gingers unite.
Can you tell me for Julianne Moore, which is, by the way, a really, really great answer. And I think everybody listening is giving standing ovations in their Toyota Priuses. When you say Julianne Moore, is there a...
You say Toyota Prius C? I had a Toyota Prius C, the compact. I had one of those for eight years.
Wow, I really just what's the word?
Channeling. You're like a medium. You're like
affirming.
I'm feeling.
I was affirming.
What type of car you had?
I'm getting Prius C. God, I wish I was a medium that could just name people's make and models. you have I want to go really niche. What's that? See, I'm too gay to get a niche car reference.
Yeah,
you have a RAV4
hybrid.
Julianne Moore, is there a specific film that really you think represents her abilities well or speaks to you as a gay guy?
I love The Hours. Me. I'm sort of this crazy gay guy who loves The Hours.
Not to go against the grain. It's,
right. Something unique about me is sort of this movie about three women. but yeah, I just love her in that movie, and I love I love her. I picture her like driving that car and feel like her quite a bit. So yeah, oh, I really respond to that character as somebody with like some inherent depression.
Yeah, and listen, that is so classique for a queer person, which is relating to Julianne Moore's depression. I also, speaking of sort of gay plot connections, the movie that I watched more recently than I would like to admit of hers is The Kids Are All Right. I know it came out in 2010, but that movie, I remember seeing it being like, where the fuck have I been? I mean, it just... I'm also looking at the
She's
poster
so
now.
Good.
I forgot that Josh Hutcherson is in that movie, which...
Yeah, he plays the son.
Okay, shout out to Josh Hutcherson.
That movie's great, and Mark Ruffalo is great. I mean, Annette Bening is obviously
Annette
amazing.
Bening.
I would save her, and you know what I would save in a movie I could watch anytime? 20th Century Women.
I just love
movies about three women.
First Wives Club, hello.
Yes. 20th
Hocus
Century
Pocus?
Women, Greta Gerwig, Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning. Billy Crudup?
Billy Crudup.
Okay, this is going to go on my list. Everybody,
you've never seen it?
Oh, I've never seen 20th Century Women, and especially for a
great soundtrack too.
Wow.
Great, amazing score.
Okay, y'all, we have some homework. If any of us have not seen 20th Century Women like me, we'll be watching that. Shout out to Greta Gerwig, Elle Fanning, Annette Bening. Stunning answer. Thank you for giving us the three-woman film industrial complex. Brennan Scannell, will you tell these listeners where to follow you, how they can get tics to your stunning Edinburgh show, and anything else you'd like for them to know?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram at bscan, and my show, I'm doing it currently in Scotland, depending on when this comes out, and you can, it's very easy to find. And then on that September 9th and 10th, I'm doing it in LA at the Elysian Theater. And then October 1st, I'm doing it at the Bell House, Brooklyn.
Okay, very huge for us LA and New York girlies. I've linked Brennan's stuff in the description, so go see his show. And you'll, of course, hear more stunning tales from a comedian and actor that we are just so lucky he came on to this gay ass pod. Brendan, we're gonna now mosey our way on to the paywalled section of this podcast. When you came on this podcast, I asked you if you might have any formative hookup or dating tales. Now, the reason why I bring this up now is because you actually wrote somewhere, for better or for worse, I spent a lot of my 20s in gay bars, dancing, yelling about Liza Minnelli, making out, and getting shit-faced. Do you have any memorable slutty tales from either your 20s or your past that you feel like you could share on this day-ass podcast?
I think one thing that, I mean, I don't drink anymore, but I used to, as any gay guy in LA probably knows, if they ever saw me out, they'd be like, that guy's drunk. And so I definitely did my fair share of like waking up the next day with like six new numbers saved in my phone and then not realizing who they were. So sometimes like now I'll do shows, and like I host a show with Joel Kim Booster that a lot of gay guys come to, and like I'll come out after the show and there will be like a group of guys waiting to just like say hello or a good show to us. And I'm always like, do we know each other? Like, are we friends? Like, did we make out at some point? Like, should I know who you are?
For the rest of the interview, head to Substack, linked below, where you will also find chats with Colin Braun, Rich Burns, Christopher Pattison Rosso, Tyler Varvel, Sebastian Dino, Cody Silver, Johnny Sibley, Sam Altizer, and more. It's at substack.com/@EricWills. And I will see you there for a gorgeous, hairy, horny time. I love you. Bye.